Sermon 124. In Sifan Imam Ali, in the beginning, strongly objected to arbitration, telling his army to realize that they were on the verge of a victory, and that to save itself from a crushing defeat, the enemy had raised scraps of paper and rags upon spears, calling them the Holy Quran, and was entreating and suing for arbitration, and that it was not wise to be deceived by such a ruse. But the advice given by Imam Ali was not heeded, and some of the officers of the army, who had received big bribes from the enemy and wanted to end the war in his favor, were on the point of revolt. Seeing this, Imam Ali reluctantly agreed for arbitration. At this stage, a man who could not properly understand the situation stood up and asked Imam Ali, "At first you strongly objected to arbitration and later on you agreed to it.
We are at a loss to understand
which action was nearer to the cause of truth and justice." Thereupon he sorrowfully replied thus, "This confusion is due to the presence of those people who cannot keep their promises and cannot sincerely obey the orders. Beware, as I was commanding you, I had ordered something which was repugnant to you, to keep on fighting. If you had obeyed my orders, Allah would have given good results to you. If you had constantly remained on the straight path shown by me, I would have guided you to success. I would have corrected ordinary wavering by you, and routine punishment would have been the result of disobedience. This would have been the correct course and would have brought forth good results. But most of you completely revolted against me. On whose support and help could I issue orders and force others to obey me? I wanted to make you a medium to treat the diseased mentality of the nation and to guide it towards the path of true religion. But you are behaving like the worst form of a disease yourself. Seeking to root out a trouble with your help is like trying to eradicate an evil with the help of another evil, knowing all the time that evils have the tendency of harmonizing and cooperating with one another. O Allah, the mental condition of these people is such that those who wanted to improve it have been sadly disappointed in their expectations, and those who wanted to lead the country towards better ways of life felt tired and discouraged. Where are those people who, when invited to Islam, accepted it sincerely, who read the Holy Quran and wholeheartedly followed the commands it contained, who loved Islam as a she-camel loves her young one, and when ordered to fight in defense of Islam, they willingly left their homes and families? Some of them died as martyrs, and some survived the ordeal. Success never overjoyed them, and deaths never made them miserable. Sights of human misery saddened their lives. Constant absorption of their minds and bodies in the performance of their duties towards Allah and man made them look pale and haggard, and humility manifested itself in their behavior as against the vanity of pseudo-pious people. They were brethren to me. They have gone, are dead. I am justified in desiring to meet them once again and to be sad on separation from them. O people, Satan has made the ways of vice easy and pleasing for you. He tries to untie every knot with which religion has tied you into groups of people attached to and united with one another. And he introduces discord and dissension amongst you. Listen then to the advice and instructions of the man who is your leader and guide, the Imam himself. Try to understand fully these pieces of advice and never forget them. 725. After the Battle of Siphon, a party of those people who had done their worst on that occasion and had succeeded in forcing Imam Ali to arbitration revolted against him. Originally, they were in the army of Imam Ali, but receiving heavy bribes from Muawiyah, they brought about the arbitration. Later on, they saw their mistake and felt humiliated and having been fooled by Amaras and Muawiyah. But instead of realizing the fact that they had brought all this upon themselves and upon the nation, they with easy conscience tried to lay the blame at the door of Imam Ali and revolted against him. When they constantly refused to accept his good advice, persisted in rebellion, decided to fight against him and forced him into battle, he came out in the battlefield and, going in front of his ranks, inquired, "Were all of you present on the battlefield of Siphon?" They replied, "Some of us were present while others were not there." Thereupon, he asked them to divide themselves into two parties, one consisting of those who were present on that battlefield and the other of those who were not there, so that he might talk to them according to standards of their knowledge of the facts. "Be silent for just a while. Hear me carefully. Pay attention to what I say, and when I ask of you, then confirm the facts truthfully and sincerely." Saying this, he delivered a long address, parts of which follows. When the army of Muawiyah artfully and cunningly hoisted the Holy Quran on spears with a view to cheat you out of a sure and certain victory, did you not say that they were your brethren and were followers of the same religion? Did you not say that they wanted the war to come to an end and wanted to take refuge under the Holy Book? Did you not beseech me to accept their request and to give them protection and peace? Did I not tell you that they were pretending Islam and have the enmity of Allah hidden in their hearts? Did I not tell you that your weakness and your pity would result in our disgrace and humiliation? Did I not order you to go your way and to continue fighting bravely, courageously, and patiently till the enemy was completely vanished and routed? Is it not a fact that I had already advised you not to pay attention to those praying asses, Muawiyah and Amaras, because a response to their call would result in your deviation from the right path? And had you not then acceded to their entreaties, they would have been defeated and humiliated. But you were bent upon accepting the cheaters and believing in the words of apostates, and did not rest till the arbitration took place and your humiliation was confirmed. Were these not the facts? When they testified that they were Imam Ali, continued, "By Allah, I am bound in duty to Allah not to accept this humiliation and disgrace. And I do not commit any sin in refusing to accede to it. If ever I had accepted an arbitration, it would have been on the principles taught by the Holy Quran, and I would have been fully justified to take such an action. You know fully well that since I took up this book, Holy Quran, I never deserted it. You know very well that when we went to wars in the company of the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, against the enemies of Islam, we unhesitantly faced and fought against our nearest and dearest relatives. We submitted to the order of Allah implicitly and sincerely, and bore the pangs and pains of wounds patiently and cheerfully, our sufferings increased in us a firm resolve to succeed and to serve Allah. Today we are fighting against those of our brethren who pretend to be Muslims, but really are apostates and heretics. Sophistication, schism, and wrong interpretation of the Holy Quran is their practice, and doubts about the truth of its doctrines have crept into their minds. When we desire peace, it is with the hope that Allah may unite us and may bring our enemies nearer to Islam. If this appears to be possible, we shall desire peace and not for war. Sermon 126. Part of the Imam's sermon, which he delivered on a battlefield, contains an advice to strong and brave people to help the weak and the nervous. Whoever in a field of battle finds himself courageous and brave enough to face the enemy and bears the brunt of war boldly, and sees one of his brethren in a nervous state, should try to go to the help of his nervous companion and defend him against his enemies with the same courage and zeal that he exhibits in defending himself. This should be a mark of gratitude for the courage and strength granted to him by Allah. If Allah so wills, the other person will also muster courage and strength by this example. Remember that death is such a quick and greedy seeker that it catches hold of everybody. No one is spared, neither the one who tries to close his doors for it, nor the one who tries to run away from it. I swear by Allah, who is the master of the life of Abu Talib's son, Imam Ali himself, that I feel it's nobler to die on a battlefield with hundreds of wounds on my body than to die in bed. The following passage is considered by some a part of the above discourse, and by others a piece of some other sermon. Therefore, I have numbered it as 126a. I feel as if I am looking at you on the occasion of your rout from the battlefield. You are squeaking like a crowd of lizards fleeing before death. You neither have the courage to stand up for your rights, truth and justice, nor the chivalry to put a stop to the cruelty and oppression. You have been shown the path of salvation and are at liberty to accept or reject it. One who follows the path of Allah gets salvation, and one who wavers is doomed. Sermon 127. Instructions to his soldiers: how to fight, how to advance, and how to behave in a battlefield. Some commentators consider this as a part of Sermon 126, delivered on a battlefield. Those who have armors on would be given a place in front ranks, and those who have not any armors should be in the rear of the army. Be firm. Do not let nervousness make your teeth chatter, because firmness and courage are the best shields against swords of your enemy. Hold your spears firmly, because a firm hand makes the movement of spears very effective. Do not overestimate the strength and arms of your enemy, for true confidence in your members and arms will give you courage and will reduce your nervousness, and you will feel better equipped for the fight. Do not shout and thus lose your breath, for holding of breath and silence will make you more determined and will increase your courage. Take particular care of your standards and flags. Do not let them be borne by unsuitable persons. Let your flag bearers be those brave and experienced soldiers who can keep them raised against heavy odds and thus keep up the prestige as well as the courage of your army. Do not leave these flags and flag bearers alone. Rally round them when necessary. Let only those who can patiently face sufferings and who are skillful and experienced warriors gather round the flags, especially when the battle is raging furiously and when there is a lot of bloodshed. Remember that experienced persons will neither retreat, surrendering the flags, nor advance, leaving them unguarded. The one who feels that he is more than a match for his enemy must try to help his weak and nervous companion, and should not leave him alone to face his enemy single-handed. Gross selfishness and callousness in a battlefield often results in harm to callous persons also. For usually, the enemy, after vanquishing a weak antagonist, joins hands with his companions to overcome the strong one also. So the strong ones should remember that selfishness does not pay. By Allah, if you do not face the swords of your enemy today and run away from them, you will never be safe from their swords in future. What is more, being nobles of Arabia and men of rank and status, you should not exhibit cowardice and nervousness. Remember that in running away from a battlefield, you incur the wrath of Allah and you gather permanent disgrace and everlasting humiliation. One who runs away from a battlefield cannot thus enhance the span of his life, because nothing can postpone the day of his death. Whoever is so anxious to reach the realm of Allah as a thirsty person is anxious to reach a water hole should remember that paradise lies under the shadows of those spears which you face while defending Islam. Today, the day one passes in a battlefield defending Islam, is the day when pious and sincere persons are to be tested for their sincerity in religion and belief in Allah. So far as I am concerned, I am more desirous of facing my enemy than they are desirous of reaching home safe from the battlefield. O Allah, if they refuse to accept the truth, then please scatter them. Do not let them join the forces of evil against you and man, and punish them for their sins. Their sinful and vicious life will not cease poisoning human minds unless their forces are completely overpowered, unless they are fully vanquished and exterminated, and unless the centers of their activities are destroyed. Sermon 128. The truth of the case of arbitration is that we never originally agreed to have any two persons from amongst us as arbitrators, but we agreed to have the Holy Quran as an arbitrator between us. But as you know, the Holy Quran is a book encased between the two covers. It cannot speak out like a human being. It naturally requires somebody to understand and explain it, and it is equally natural to have human being to translate it and to give orders according to its tenets. When Muawiyah and his hordes invited me to the Holy Quran for decision, I could not turn my face away from the Book of Allah. The mighty and glorious Allah has declared, "If you differ about anything, then refer it to Allah and His Messenger." Surah Al-Nisa 4:59. referring to Allah, means that we should search the Holy Book and act according to its tenets and commandments. Referring to the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, means that we should follow his example and act upon his traditions. If one follows the teachings of the Quran honestly, sincerely, and without mental reservation, then one will find that we, Imam Ali himself, and the descendants of the Holy Prophet, are the best people to be obeyed. If one accepts the traditions of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his descendants, one should know that we alone deserve to command and teach the faithful people. As regards your objection as to why I allowed such long period to elapse before acting against a judgment which was based upon schism, hypocrisy, cunningness, and deceit, and which was wrongly named an arbitration, I say that I acted like that because ignorant people during this period may come to distinguish between truth and falsehood. And persons well versed in the teachings of the Holy Quran and the traditions of the Holy Prophet may be firmly convinced of their faith, and also with the hope that perhaps during these quiet and peaceful days, people may utilize the guidance of the divine religion to improve their ways and to differentiate between just and unjust, for which they should be given chance before they are asked to decide or are punished for their wrong decision. Surely before Allah, the most excellent and the most deserving of His blessings is the person who would love to accept the truth and act justly and rightly. Though his beliefs and actions may cause him severe losses and sufferings, and who would not adopt sinful ways of life, though they may bring him power. I do not know how and whence have skepticism and confusion entered into your thoughts, and how the Satan has taken hold of your minds, that you have become so anxious to join the ranks of such skeptics and misguided people who are cruel, tyrannous, and oppressive, who violate rights of others, and who do not understand the teachings of the Holy Quran. They have gone astray and have deviated from the true path of religion. But, alas, your faith in Islam also cannot be trusted, nor your promises and pledges be relied upon. In defending Islam, I cannot with confidence seek your help, nor can I be wise in considering you such honorable allies as to be dependent upon in time of need. You are also the worst people to provoke wars and strifes. Sorrow be upon you. You have always caused me anxiety and pain. Whenever I invited you to come to help the cause of religion, you never proved yourself brave and sincere. And whenever I entrusted you with important secrets, you always betrayed me. Sermon 129. When Imam Ali began allotting equal shares from Baitul Mal, public treasury, to all Muslims, irrespective of their being Arabs or non-Arabs, Hijazis or Iraqis, Persians or Negroes, masters or slaves, noblemen or commoners, tribal sheikhs or mere peasants and laborers, rich or poor, scions of influential clans or paupers from the street, heads of communities or ordinary people, conquerors or the conquered, rulers or the ruled, when he started equal distribution of wealth and opportunities and gave more consideration to diseased, disabled and crippled, or weak and old. When helplessness, physical deformity and poverty were placed by him at a premium, and when rich and powerful were leveled down to the same plane as poor and helpless, there arose a hue and cry. Frustrated expectations, baffled plans of acquiring fortunes and opulence, thwarted schemes of achieving grandeur and pomp, and balked hopes of controlling centers of wealth and power, made those who were planning and scheming great futures for themselves resented this system of equality of wealth and opportunities. Many felt that the poor, the destitute, the disabled, and the diseased were becoming the centers of interest and sympathies of the government, and they themselves were losing the influence which they were wielding till then. They rose in unison to protest, and some by Ibn Hunayf. On each occasion, Imam Ali explained to them the principles of equity and justice, the theory of a fair distribution of wealth and opportunities, the doctrine of equality of man, and the commands of Allah and the Holy Prophet in that respect. On one of those occasions, the following sermon was delivered. Do you want me to seek your help by oppressing and tyrannizing the people over whom I am appointed by Allah to rule? By Allah, this will not happen so long as I continue to live in this world, and so long as the stars exist under mutual gravitation. I can never abuse the power vested in me, nor can I be cruel towards human beings. Had it all been even my personal property, I would have dispersed it equally amongst the needy and the poor. But it, the national wealth, is the property of Allah, entrusted to human care. Beware that to spend on undeserving cause and to donate it to undeserving persons is dissipation and waste of wealth. A squanderer may gain some unholy popularity in this world, but his position in the next world will be unenviable. Unjustifiable and undeserving donations may enhance the status of a man among his worldly surroundings, but he is sadly humiliated in the eyes of Allah. One who spends his wealth in evil ways and on wrong persons is deprived by the Lord of the gratitude of those over whom he had spent. These undeserving beneficiaries usually turn against him, and at the time of distress and need, he finds them as his worst enemies, censoring his actions and blaming him for his lavish grants. Sermon 130. Imam Ali delivered this sermon when news reached him that Kharijites were massacring Muslims simply because they had different views. You have resolved upon believing that I have made a mistake and I am a sinner. And if you are bent upon understanding nothing else, you are welcome to it. But simply because you want to oppose me, why do you consider all other followers of the Holy Prophet Muhammad Mustafa, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, to be mistaken and misguided? Why do you hold them responsible for my mistakes? Why do you consider them to be unbelievers and infidels for my so-called sin? You have got swords in your hands and you are using them indiscriminately against everybody. killing sinners as well as innocent and pious people.